Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Grid Talk. My name is George Howson, and today we are here to preview the 2024 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Joining me today, we have Phil Matthew from the Grip Strip podcast.
Hello.
And from Paddock Pals, it's Warren Shaw.
How's it going?
Going very well, my friend. Hope it is for both of you as well. But before we get into the episode itself, we need to thank our sponsor for this episode, Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. Bet Online continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available right to play right from your phone. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. And today we're going to start with, well, the fact that actually all cars finished the race in Bahrain, which I believe is actually a first for the first race of the season. It's very rare that all the cars actually managed to finish the race. I think we saw it three times last season. And Warren, it's not really a huge surprise in a sense, because obviously we had so much running at Bahrain earlier in the month just from pre-season testing. And yeah, it's something that could be a sign of the season ahead, really. We could well get, I don't know, maybe five or six races this season where all the cars finish. I mean, what are your thoughts on it? It's quite impressive from a technical standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. It is really impressive. I mean, there were even no like red flags during testing too of like breakdowns. So that's another thing. And I think you've seen since they went to these new regulations after like the beginning of the first couple of races when that was in 2021, I think the reliability of the cars have been really, really good, and they've gotten better over as they've learned the car more and everything. So yeah, it's really impressive, and it's also hard during the race when there's no like safety cars or anything to get it a little spiced up when the pack is all spread out or something. So you're like kind of rooting for something, but you know it's probably not going to happen. But no, it's a testament to all the teams, I think, that they've gotten like the reliability right. I know we're going to talk about them later, but like Alpine car is so slow, but it's reliable so far. At least they didn't have any technical breakdowns. You would have thought, hey, maybe they would have had one of those or something like that. But like even the cars running at the back of the field don't have big reliability issues. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, very impressive indeed. What do you think about this weekend coming up with Saudi Arabia? Do you think we're likely to see a repeat of that? Because obviously, Jeddah is a street circuit. It's very high speed. The barriers are right there on the edge of the circuit. If Logan Sargeant, for example, had that incident that he had where he went off the track in Saudi Arabia instead of Bahrain, I wager he probably would have hit a wall. Do you think it's likely we're going to see a repeat this weekend?
No, I think we'll probably have some DNFs because of the driver error. No, I don't think car reliability will be fine, but I think the DNFs this weekend will be a driver error. I mean, this track, I don't know about you guys, but when someone puts in like a great qualifying lap or something, I mean, it's beautiful and mesmerizing to watch, but it's also like really scary sometimes of how close they get to the walls and then some of the turns. It's quite an interesting, it's edge of the seat stuff, I'll say that, on this circuit for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I think especially in qualifying, like you said, when the cars are fully decked out in the fastest possible trim, lowest fuels, the stickiest tyres, it is fantastic to watch. It really is. But it can be a bit of an assault course during the race. But I guess that's part of the beauty of it in a sense. I mean, from a purely racing perspective, it is entertaining in that sense. But yeah, so something I want to talk about as well, kind of calling back to Bahrain, Phil, is the fact that obviously, let's not beat around the bush. It was not the most entertaining race by any stretch of the imagination, partly because, yeah, the cars were so reliable. There was not really any incidents to speak of, nothing serious anyway. But something I want to touch on is like, I think Bahrain's actually quite a good track, especially since they moved it to a night race. I usually look forward to the race, but Have we seen a repeat of what we used to get in Catalonia when we used to do the pre-season testing there? Because if you look at the order of the cars, especially in the top 10, I think, you know, Warren mentioned before the show started that we actually got very close to having a Noah's Ark formation of the top five teams in the top 10 places for what would have been the first time in Formula One history. Do you think Bahrain last week suffered because we had so much running and the teams are so knowledgeable about the track?
I mean, it's possible. I also thought that Catalunya wasn't a great circuit anyways for Formula One. It's more of a motorcycle track, and it's been proven. Bahrain has been a good track for Formula One for the last few years. And honestly, I think it's more the cars themselves than because there hasn't been a lot of changes. You look at the fact that, I mean, the running, yeah, sure, they have a lot of data. But personally, I don't see what's going to be different over these first few races before they get back to Europe. So it won't be a track thing at Saudi, because Saudi is its own kind of like entity in what kind of track it is. In Australia, they've raced there many years. So yeah, if they test there, it's convenience because then they don't have to fly back and forth. They have other series do that or used to do that. I know IMSA does it before the 24 hours of Daytona, and it doesn't affect the racing in a negative way, but that's IMSA. I mean, Formula One has its own challenges, and you already have kind of hierarchy of teams, and nothing that we saw in testing really was surprising once it came down to it on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, it's an interesting viewpoint. I mean, who knows, if we didn't have preseason testing at Bahrain, it could have been a different race. It could have been the exact same race. We don't know, simple as that. But I thought it was an interesting comparison to make because a lot of people complained about Catalonia's races being boring. And one of the main reasons usually cited for that is the fact that preseason testing used to be there. Bahrain was very boring this year, arguably because the preseason testing was there too. But yeah, I think people complain about Catalonia, but I think people will probably complain a lot more at that Madrid circuit that's been revealed to come onto the calendar in a few years' time. I am not a fan, I will say that. But yeah, we'll reserve some judgment on that for when it comes in a couple of years' time. I wanted to mention as well, Warren, about Aston Martin. Now, I guess the places where they ended up in the end, Alonso in 9th, Lance Stroll in 10th, not really that much of a surprise. They were the 5th fastest car overall last year in terms of placing. They've kind of continued where they left off last year in terms of that. But I want to mention Lance Stroll, though. He's a guy who obviously comes in for a lot of criticism, not least from myself and some of the other people on this show. But the recovery drive that he did to get back up to 10th was very impressive. Bahrain seems to be a track that he seems to find trouble at, either off or on the track, that seems to put in some of his best performances of the season. Has he been unfairly criticised, and are we likely to see him that close to Alonso again this weekend?
I don't know if he's unfairly criticized, especially last year when all of the top six teams got podium. The drivers got podiums except for Stroll. So 11 for 12, and he was the one that missed, especially when Alonso got 8 podiums last year. I don't think there's any criticism, overly criticized him there. But no, he's not horrible. He's not a horrible driver. Of the nepotism kids, I've said, he's actually like pretty good on the nepotism side if you're comparing those drivers. So good marks for him on that. But I don't really know what to make of him. He'll just put out the performance that, like you said, he gets spun there and then he makes his way into the points for a points finish. Probably the 5th fastest car, so you expect that where he should be to get a points finish. No, I think he's fairly criticized, and people might go a little bit over the top because he's kind of a dork, but hey, you know what? That's what happens. It happens.
That is such an American insult. I don't think I've heard someone called a dork since they used to watch Saturday Morning Cop Circus regularly.
I mean, he is a dork, isn't he? They even showed, like, I don't know if you guys watched like the Drive to Survive at all. I know it's a hot top, but even like the first episode, they're at this just like fancy party that Aston Martin put up, and he's just like, what is this guy? He's got like no personality or nothing. He's a dork.
Do you think that Lance Stroll is a dork? Let us know on our socials. Great. So at Gridtalk UK on everywhere you can find the symbol.
I think he's more of a dweeb, because that's another term from back in Saturday morning TV days here in the U.S. He's a combination of a, well, I'm not going to go down that road. We're not supposed to be calling people names here. We're supposed to be right on the line, you know, here on Brit Talk. So it is a new year, trying to be positive here.
Well, I will say I do a great job of like giving a little compliment and then giving a nice insult.
Yeah,
so Carlos Sainz has been on the firing end of that from me. Lance Stroll has now been the latest one that's been in the firing line.
We'll see how long the positivity lasts from Phil. I mean, we've gone past one race. We've got 23 more to go. Let's see how we get on with that.
But there's a way, and yesterday it worked perfectly fine. So we'll see if said way continues during the rest of the season. So,
well, here's a real challenge, Phil. I mean, just purely coincidentally, the next topic that we have up is Alpine. There is absolutely nothing positive to say about them at the moment. They qualified last. I mean, to be honest with you, with the testing times, we would not expecting a lot from them, but even then they were very disappointing. Qualified last, 19th and 20th for Gasly and Ocon. Ocon saying after the qualifying session, come on guys, we can do this, you know, the race is tomorrow, we can fight tomorrow. I don't know. I mean, there's optimism and there's delusion, because it turns out that the Alpine's qualifying pace was similar to the race pace. They had none. The only guys that finished behind them were Bottas and Sargeant. Bottas having a minute-long pit stop nearly. Sargeant going off the road and losing a good minute himself.
And steering issues.
And steering issues, yeah. Some reliability problems with the Williams, but not causing a retirement. I mean, what is there to say about Alpine, Phil? Is this genuinely as bad as it looks for them? And can they recover? Because obviously, 12 months ago, I was saying the same thing about my beloved team McLaren, and they managed to recover it. Are you seeing a kind of comeback for Alpine this year later on?
No. Just no. And it's not because Otmar Szafnauer was let go, or insert name here, was let go. They're a poorly run organization. They have made too many changes that have been to the negative. They weren't exactly working from a plus standpoint, power unit wise, car wise, driver wise, they're fine. They have two French drivers, which I don't know how long it's taken them to finally get that. Do they get along? No. But the fact of the matter is they have two good drivers that both have won a race. That's not the issue. If there's the only thing they have going for them is that. Gasly, solid, got put through the ringer with OEM and them at Red Bull. You have Ocon, who's Max Verstappen's best friend. And he's been through the ringer himself, self-inflicted or not. But both of them have shown and at different times of their careers. But the car is ugly. The car is slow. And, I mean, I was thinking about what McLaren brought to the table this time last year, just as an example. And I'm like, well, the difference was there was an energy that, you know, you had Zach Brown sitting there kind of trying to push, you know, to say, like, this isn't going to last. Yeah, it was not good. And you don't want to start out that far back. But the miracle that happened in the summer basically has pushed all these other teams to understand or see there is a light. If you can actually put the right people together, focusing on the right things, you could get your car to a place where it'll actually be worthwhile. But the difference is McLaren has, you know, leadership. McLaren has a direction and focus. Their drivers are very hungry and are not only want to push each other, but they're looking at moving to the front. There is no direction at Alpine. And, you know, with the F1 and me going off on tangents the way I have in the past, it's like they didn't want Andretti around as an 11th team. But then you harbor a team like Alpine, who constantly makes changes and is basically an anchor. And it's like, why don't you just, and Andretti doesn't bring more cachet than Alpine? I mean, come on now. I mean, if they're going to drop anchor and drive in the back, at least we could have something to talk about with Andretti. If you're going to drop anchor and be as bad as what Alpine is, what are we going to say? Their WEC team has potential? Well, yeah, of course their WEC team has potential because that's a new car. But yeah, I don't know. That's a combination of years and years of work that finally came through to conspire now for them to be as bad as, like, I remember early 2000s. That was where they were. That team, the Enstone team, where they basically had come with the new Renault engine and they were at the back of the grid. And a certain world champion was made to seem like he couldn't drive well before he became a world champion, of course. But so, I mean, that those were the days when they were terrible. And I think they're going back to those days.
Yeah, that Enstone outfit is far from one that's been consistent. Not only has it changed its brands and owners over the years so much, but yeah, I mean, even after that, Phil, I remember, you know, Alonso going back to Renault in 2008, and that car was pretty terrible. I mean, I think he still won a few races that season, but that's Alonso. And then in 2009, it was even worse. So yeah, so it is far from a consistent outfit in Formula One. And yeah, they are well off it at the moment. And the revolving door of team principals and senior staff is not going to help. And I don't know how true it is. I've not verified it myself, but I did see that a few senior people at Alpine have apparently been sacked. Some of the designers who worked on the car, which you can imagine why, if that's true. Although if it's true or not, I don't know. But just sorry, it came up in my feed earlier on today. So yeah, from Alpine, who are arguably backmarkers at the moment, to Haas, Warren. Now, I think you were the American panelist who disowned them as an American team on the podcast last year. And despite some very unremarkable testing times, they actually looked not bad this weekend in Bahrain. K-Mag coming up from 15th to 12th by the finish. Hulkenberg getting a top 10 start, obviously ploughing into the back of Lance Stroll at the start and did all of that work, but still, not too bad for them. So are we likely to see, potentially, especially since, you know, Jeddah's not the easiest track to overtake around, are points on the cards potentially for Haas this weekend?
Maybe if they get a good at qualifying, like they tend to do going into last year, they could maybe potentially get some points. But I think their new team principal, Ayo Komatsu, he deserves a lot of credit for the strategy that he implemented at testing. He said, hey, we are going to figure out why the tires couldn't last more than like five laps during the race, and we just dropped like an anchor during the race. So they were good on qualifying last year. They had a lot of good Q3 runs, but they could not do anything in the race and they just fall back. So he's like, hey, we're just going to worry about long run. I don't think they did not run a short qualifying test at all during testing. We're going to figure it out. So they were kind of going in blind. I think they even said after testing, they were so positive. They were like, hey, we feel like we're going to be 10th this season already. After that, they're like, hey, we think we could get 7th or 8th. So they found the data and they made changes in the week, and it showed, especially in qualifying in the race. Hey, I mean, there's an incident in turn one. Hard to tell what would have happened with Hulkenberg. I don't think he would have got points, but he could have been close and fighting for it. And they keep gathering data and they keep improving. Who knows? They could be a much better car than what you thought going into the season. I think a lot of that is because of Ayo. And I got to say, like, Gunther, we all know he was a great character in it, but he was not a good team principal. Like, he just, it never seemed like, from a leadership standpoint, and a lot of it just based on leadership tactics. Like, he always seemed like he played the woe is me, oh, Gene, like, whenever he felt Gene, it was so bad out there. Like, he's just such a woe is me guy. And if you're in a position like that, I think you need to be direct and as a leader and say, hey, we weren't good, or say, like, we're trying to figure something out. It didn't seem like, I know he's not an engineer or something, but as a team principal, you got to figure out how to get your people that can improve the team to be in positive situations. And it didn't seem like he was doing that a lot. So I think the aura of Gunther or whatever, getting him on a Haas, I know that's like, he was a face of Haas, and that's good. Every team needs a face. because right now Haas really doesn't have any face. We talked about Andretti bringing value. Andretti, as an American, they bring way more value than Haas. I don't think anybody would deny that, but they're lacking for a face. He was the face. But I think what they got there going forward, I think they're going to surprise some people, and people probably shouldn't be surprised because of the change at the team principal spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I even as an outsider, even as a non-American, you know, the name Andretti, like that is a legendary name in motorsport, if nothing else, and also a damn good racing team at that as well. Yeah, they definitely, because honestly, I'd never even heard of Haas really, other than the odd mention of Newman Haas, I think, in IndyCar or NASCAR, one of them.
Well, it's a different Haas.
Are they a different Haas?
NASCAR. Yeah, they're a different Haas. That's Carl Haas, who was the Lola distributor in America, and he worked with him and Paul Newman were rivals in F5000, and then they were put together, I forget by who, in the early 80s, and then they became what they became over the years. But yeah, Gene Haas is just a billionaire who makes CNC machines and stuff, and then he owned a NASCAR team that sucked, and then Tony Stewart got it on pennies on the dollar as a majority after Gene went to jail for tax evasion. And then somewhere along the line, he wanted to make a Formula One team. He thought that there was going to be different rules. Essentially, they're the Ferrari, like a Ferrari customer. And that's what started it. And then he needed Gunther, and Gunther was in NASCAR with the Red Fool Cup team for years. And of course, they were amazing. And then because he had experience in Formula One, so brought him here. But then they let him stay way too long. And that was part of the problem with Gunther.
Yeah, I mean, a repeating and regular problem for Haas over the years has been the fact that they absolutely cook their rear tyres over a race distance. And that happened, I remember, I think it was Austria 2019 or something like that. I think K-Mag qualified fifth. He was 20th by the end of the first pit stop because his tyres were just destroyed. So they've always qualified well, but the race pace is something to struggle with. However, in Bahrain, going off this evidence, it was actually a lot better for them. Although, from what I've heard, I mean, people were saying, oh, it's cold in Bahrain. It was cold that weekend. I mean, it was 20 degrees, which, as a Brit, is actually summertime. But I suppose for Bahrain, it was actually quite cold. So maybe in hotter temperatures around a much more intense track, they'll struggle more. But who knows? If they qualify well, particularly Hulk, and they can hold it, then points are on the cards. And for any team outside of that top five to score any points, it's going to be a big win for them. It's going to be a big win for them because it's going to be so hard to score points through this season with how reliable these cars are and how fast those top five teams are. But yeah, so moving on to a Ferrari, and in particular, Carlos Sainz, actually, as well. I was seriously impressed with Phil. He won a Driver of the Day, our Grid Talk Driver of the Day. I think he also won the actual Driver of the Day for Formula One, too. Yeah, was not that impressive during qualifying, was a decent gap behind Charles Leclerc, but in the race, he looked far more comfortable. He wasn't making any mistakes. I don't know if Charles Leclerc actually had brake issues or just issues with the brakes, if you know what I mean, but Sainz was not making any of the mistakes that Charles Leclerc was. I was really impressed, and some people might be asking, have they dropped the wrong driver?
I mean, that is a really good conversation. I think there's a longer conversation to be had about the smooth operator and Charles Leclerc. I mean, but when you look at the way that the weekend went, Charles Leclerc's biggest strength is his one lap speed. And then he goes and loses his noodle during the race. Carlos Sainz is not exactly, he's not an amazing qualifier. Yes, he's made it goals or whatever, and he's done that over time, but he's not considered the amazing qualifier. When he's been in all these different teams, usually it's like a 50-50 kind of deal where he out-qualifies his teammate. I know Warren was talking about it offline with Carlos, but I mean, for me, I rate Carlos, and I've rated him for a while. You know, to be put through that ringer with OEM at Red Bull to make it through and still have a career in Formula One to the point now where he's actually a Grand Prix winner. Also living up to being the namesake of one of the greatest rally drivers of all time and coming from Spain after Alonso, all those different pressures that existed, and Carlos Sainz has made his own line, made his own path, and he's a better racer, better race driver than Charles Leclerc is. It's become, I mean, I don't think that that's a controversial statement. I think that that's just the reality if you look at what's been going on. Charles Leclerc makes too many mistakes, boneheaded mistakes. He makes mistakes that for somebody of his caliber, he shouldn't make. You wonder why he can't take that next step. Well, it's the same repeated deal. Ferrari protects him because he's their face. The reality is Carlos Sainz came in and has been just as good, if not better, at a lot of times. And I don't, it's not a surprise to me. And personally, for who he's getting replaced by, yes, it's tough. Should they have kept Carlos Sainz over Charles Leclerc? Probably. They'd have a much better team. And I think Carlos Sainz would benefit more from Lewis's tutelage than Charles Leclerc. He's not going to correct Charles Leclerc's inability to his mental game. He's just not going to correct that. He's a lot like Valtteri in that sense, you know, where if he didn't have the car, he's going to go and disappear. But, I mean, I think the battles, considering how god-awful it is at the front, at least the Ferrari battle will have some intrigue. There will be something to look at every single weekend, that dynamic between those two guys and also with McLaren, and even to a lesser extent with Mercedes, with Lewis and Glassjaw. I mean, it'll be those inner team battles will be the most intriguing part of the season. I think that'll keep us going, that'll keep the show going, because that's where you'll get that the deeper stories and the real human interest pieces, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it definitely seems like that at the moment, with how in order the cars are in terms of teams. You know, like I said, we almost had a nose out formation for the whole top 10, the whole top 5 teams in Bahrain. And yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, I mean, I personally would rather have Charles Leclerc in my team, just because the guy is insanely quick. I feel like if he had a more consistent car, then maybe he could do better. But the evidence of Sainz, though, being a top driver, is very strong. I mean, and when he first joined at Toro Rosso, he was up against Max Verstappen, pretty much held his own. He beat Lando at McLaren. He is on a par with Leclerc at Ferrari. I think the only real exception to any of that was at Renault, where Hülkenberg beat him quite resoundingly, but he was only there for a very short time. I think he was only there for half a season, so it's a bit unfair to judge him off of that. So, I mean, for my money, if Sergio Perez doesn't perform this season, I think Red Bull might well get Carlos Sainz back. But whether Carlos Sainz will actually want to do that, that's another matter. But I think it'd be very hard, in a sense, to turn down a Red Bull at the moment, though, Warren, because their pace is absolutely electric, particularly in Verstappen's hands. I mean, winning by 22 seconds in Bahrain, I think he could have won by more if he pushed the car. He just didn't feel the need to. He was that far clear. Fair play to Perez as well, getting through and getting second place. Saudi Arabia was one of the few races that Max Verstappen didn't win last season. Do you think he's going to put that right on Saturday?
Yeah, I think he is going to put it right. But, you know, this street circuit Sergio, he's got to deal with his teammate. That's what the streets call him. I don't think there's any doubt Max is going to win. And look, I do think that Sergio does deserve a little bit of credit for finishing second, because last year with the car so dominant, he was not getting those second place finishes. And I was going to say before you said it, George, that signs to Red Bull could be in the cards. I was going to say that if he wasn't going to perform, because I think that could be a good move for him. But it really is remarkable what Red Bull and Max are. I mean, this is even more dominant than Lewis and Mercedes in those runs. And that was, people were like, wow, this is quite a dominant run. I mean, they're blowing this out of the water. Like, they're blowing that run out of the water, which I don't think a lot of people thought was ever possible. And it's for the people that want the wins to be, it's obviously not great for the sport. Like, I saw a hilarious TikTok yesterday of someone putting a piece of black tape on their TV over the first place position. And like, that's not even, all right, well, we don't even care about this. The race is second going on, which think that probably might be what you have to do. But I mean, it's remarkable, and it's boring to keep talking about how dominant they are. But I almost feel like they don't get enough praise for what they've done. It's because it's just so boring to talk about.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And things on the track definitely going well, offline. Things off the track we're not really going to mention. We will cover that at some point on Grid Talk, I'm sure, when all the details do come out about that. But on the track at the moment, yeah, they're looking absolutely imperious. And it's something actually that Christian Horner said, I think, in the Brawn documentary. You know, he said the best way to become unpopular in Formula One is to start winning. And they are, by that logic, very unpopular because they are just absolutely sweeping the floor of everybody. You know, it's incredible. Max Verstappen winning 8 races in a row now. He has to win 3 more to beat his own record from last season, which was 10. And with the way things are going, you'd be very hard-pressed to bet against that. I suppose the biggest question is, can Sergio Perez keep these second places coming up? Can he hang in there? We'll have to see how that kind of goes. I will mention as well about the Racing Bulls, the RBs, the junior team for Red Bull, just as our last point. Obviously, some spicy radio messages, Tsunoda complaining about the team letting Ricciardo through just to try and battle with Magnussen. I remember Alex on the review show yesterday that as we're recording this, said he was very unimpressed with B actually doing that. There was no point to it because there was no points on offer. And in the end, Ricciardo didn't even overtake Magnussen. He didn't really get that close to doing that. Is this potentially the start of a flashpoint, I should say, for the team, Phil? Because obviously you've got Yuki Tsunoda, who eventually wants to be in a bigger team, I'm sure, at some point. And Ricciardo trying to really resurrect his career now. He's back in F1. This is not the relationship that I thought was going to be the most angry, but it seems like it after the first round.
Yeah, I, with what Alex said yesterday, I kind of agree. I mean, excuse me, why are you swapping positions for nothing when you know that at some point during the year, more than likely you're going to get up there further into and possibly get some points? It's whatever. I'm RB, V car, Toro Rosso, AlphaTauri, whatever, not Minardi. They need to have something to talk about that's a distraction to go and distract us from what's going on within the main team. So let them go and swap positions randomly and then start yelling about each other. Yuki Tsunoda already has colorful radio on his good days. And then you have Daniel Ricciardo, who basically is trying to get that second seat to be Verstappen's caddy. And so it's like, I mean, you got that kind of dynamic. You got basically the RB19 light. You have the Honda power unit. I mean, you're trying to compete, and a lot of changes they made this year. The testing times were one thing. It went all the way until qualifying, and then in qualifying it went the other way. And then in the race, it was similar. We'll see what those guys do with each other, but is it possible that Yuki Tsunoda runs into him? It's possible. Is it possible that they're going to fight? It would be a hilarious fight to watch, since I think Daniel Ricciardo is about a foot taller than him or something, and he's got a big head. So it would be an interesting dynamic, but I mean, anything, we're just pulling at straws at this point to find stuff that's interesting, because it definitely isn't interesting up front. It hasn't been interesting for this is going on 3 years now. This is going to be the third year in a row of this nonsense. And I remember Michael Schumacher at Ferrari, and it was basically like this, if not maybe even worse. So we need to see if those two guys are going to start fighting. I'm hoping kind of like that there's a little flashpoint within your McLaren teammates, because the fact is of Oscar Piastri and how good he is. I'm kind of hoping, because the fact is that would be good. I want to really see what Lando is like under pressure like that. And then, you know, the Ferrari, like we talked about earlier. But I mean, but yeah, that's really, when you're talking about those back five teams, it's more about, can they get better pace? Will they get a point? How will they get a point? You know, stuff like that. I mean, early. I mean, I think things will kind of flesh out and we'll see some of those teams move forward. But that's what we got to talk about. And I don't know, decision making on the pit wall making and going and affecting team dynamics. It's been going on for a long time in Formula One.
It's nothing new in that regard. I was just surprised that it was going to be those guys. Hopefully it doesn't come to an actual fist fight, as you were suggesting there, because yeah, that would be an interesting sight. Before we get into our predictions for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, I just want to give a mention that if you're enjoying this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you can head over to either Spotify or Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review on there. It really helps us out. And if you're one of the 72% of the people who are listening to this show that aren't yet subscribed to the YouTube channel, please consider helping us out with a like and a subscribe over there. Or to ring the bell icon so you get the notifications for when the show is going live, which it will be after the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix for the race review there. But I'll get into details of that shortly. But yeah, so predictions time. Warren, what is your podium? Which three drivers are on there? And can you give me a bold prediction as well for the weekend?
I'm going to say that the podium is going to be Max. He's going to win. Checo will get second. And I'm going to say that Charles Leclerc will get third. He will have some breaks that he thinks can work, so he'll get a third. And my bold prediction is going to be that, I didn't really think about this, normally I do, Yuki Tsunoda will get points. I'm going to say it. Yuki will get points coming off his hothead under pressure, because I think he's under a lot of pressure this year. He's going to score some points this week.
I totally agree. I think he's absolutely under a lot of pressure at the moment, because he's got Ricciardo in the other side of the garage, which is not easy for anybody. He's a very quick driver indeed. Phil, what's your podium predictions and bold prediction for the weekend?
Yeah, Verstappen winning, Checo second. I was also going to go with Eclair, but to be different, I'll go Lando Norris third. And then in terms of the bold prediction, I know I dumped on him earlier, well earned, but I'm going to say that one Alpine will actually make it out of Q1 on Friday. And this is all because of other cars, you know, demise and people wrecking and, you know, argy-bargy going on. So one of them makes it through. They'll end up falling back to the back during the race. But that's my bold prediction. I think I'm just going to go with that for the whole year. That and Logan Sargeant will score a point, but he's only scored 1 point. And somebody I read said that he isn't going to score a point this year. And I don't know. I don't want that personally, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, Alpine absolutely falling from grace, or what little grace they had before. The fact that a bold prediction is if they'll get out of Q1, and I agree that is a bold prediction. I don't think it's particularly likely to happen, but we'll see. I mean, for me, obviously Verstappen, you can't look past him for the win. But I'll be optimistic for Ferrari and Charles Leclerc. I'll put him in second place. I've got a feeling he might be able to hold off Perez. Perez obviously finishing a long way ahead of Leclerc at the last race, but it took him a while to get past, and it's hard to pass around Jeddah. But I'll still stick Sergio on the podium. I still think he'll get third place. And for a bold prediction, let's say I'll go for a Haas in the points. Either Hulk or K-Mac. But yeah, so want to give a mention as well. So obviously, thank you for joining us both on the show. Warren, I mentioned that you are one half of the Paddock Pals podcast. What is that and where can people find it?
It's my cousin Rachel and I, another F1 podcast. You can find it Apple, Spotify. And we're on the socials, TikTok, all that stuff as well. Paddock Pals Podcast. We'll have our race review out today. Probably calling Lance Stroll a dork again. So if you want to hear it again, who knows who else is on the hot seat on the Paddock Pals Podcast. But go listen to it on Apple and Spotify.
Yeah, I think Lance Stroll has been described as a lot worse on this podcast. And I think Phil's most likely the person who's done that in the past. But yes, definitely go check out Paddock Pals.
Either me or Tom.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I reckon there's a good 80-90% chance it was one of you two, maybe both. But yeah, definitely check out Paddock Pals on there. And check out Gridstrip Podcast as well, Phil.
Yeah, the GSP over 200 episodes now. And George, you've been on the show a while back, staying up at an insane hour to do it too, so credit to you for that.
It was a late one, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah. And we, Josh Huffine and I, go and talk about all things motorsports, not just Formula One, but we talk about NASCAR, IndyCars coming back next week, thank God, NHRA, IMSA, World Endurance Championship, etc., etc. Generally, I say if it goes fast, we talk about it on the Gripstrip podcast. Executive producer me has been dereliction of duty in terms of posting, but we'll get those shows out. We had a couple friends of ours Phil Spain and Sarah Davis on last week to talk about the experience at the track for NASCAR. So that was fun. And of course, always great being on with you, George. You know, we've worked on this for a while now, and you invited me on. And so it's been a great run, and we'll continue to do that, even in the darkness that is this continuous run. But we can find fun in everything that comes with Formula One. So appreciate the opportunity to be on with you and also with you, Warren, here on the Grid Talk.
Yeah, great having you on as always, Phil. Absolutely. Yeah, no matter what, you know, we'll be here to talk about Formula One. Even when the pandemic cancelled the start of the season back in 2020, we were still here talking about Formula One, even though there was no F1 to talk about. So we can absolutely find something to talk about on Grid Talk. And if you want to hear and see more from me, you can head over to F1Chronicle.com, where I've got a weekly opinion piece on all things F1. My latest one was going over 5 things that we learned during the race weekend for Bahrain. And if you want to hear more from Grid Talk, we're available on YouTube, where most episodes are recorded live. This is not one of them. This is a preview show, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, and Pocket Cast. Just search for F1 Grid Talk on all of those to find our big back catalogue of shows, previews, reviews, sprint reviews, firesides, interviews, everything. We've got everything on there. Something for everybody. And please also consider supporting the channel financially as well on Patreon, so we can get better mics, lights, and recording equipment. And be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel as well and ring the bell icon, like I mentioned earlier on. And yeah, we'll be back on Saturday to review the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Of course, it's a Saturday, just like Bahrain, not a Sunday. That will be from 8 p.m. UK time, which I believe is 3 p.m. Eastern time. I want to thank my panelists for coming on the show. It's been great chatting as always.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been fun.
And yeah, thank you very much for listening or viewing the Grid Talk podcast presented by Bet Online. And goodbye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.